welcome to All Right in Sin City, a podcast about writers and writing in the Windsor-Detroit region. Your podcasters today are
Irene Moore Davis, author, educator, and local historian.
Kim Conklin, Windsor-based writer and filmmaker.
And me, Sarah Jarvis, former bookseller, publishing rep, and literary festival chair.
Stephanie Height is a queer disabled poet, dancer, teacher, and co-director of Turtle Disco, a somatic writing space. She is a psych system shock survivor, bipolar, a MAD activist, Zooglossia fellow, and a member of Olympias, a disability performance collective. She lives in Ypsilanti, Michigan, on the Three Fires Confederacy territory, and is the author of the poetry collection, The Color She Gave Gravity. Her new book, Psych Murders, is a collection of experimental writing. It takes readers into psychiatric wards and shock treatments toward new futures of mental health care. Welcome, Stephanie.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here with you today.
So if this is a sensitive question, you can decline. That's fine. But in your book, you start off by introducing your readers to your friend and nemesis murderer, your name for suicidal ideation, and telling us that you're writing from real experience. Was it a little bit frightening to be so open about your illness, or was it liberating for you?
Well, for me, throughout my life, I've been quite open about, you know, I identify as living with mental health difference, I identify as bipolar. And from my early 20s, I was just quite open about that, which was a way to engage with community, connect with others, reach support. And I'm also saying that as a white cis woman, also queer and disabled, but there is a certain amount of privilege in being open about mental health difference. For some people that could mean due to stigma and ableism, it could mean, you know, trouble at your job or trouble at school or whatnot. But definitely in writing Psych Murders, I had just a lot of nervousness in the lead up to the book coming out, because it is that thing of, for me, it's such, you know, it feels like it's putting, being naked in some ways, just really being honest and vulnerable with my experiences and not knowing how that was going to be received. So there was nervousness about that. At the same time, though, the experience of having the book in the world has surprised me. At first, when, you know, and with the pandemic, I just was making a couple events when the book first came out, partly because I didn't know how I would feel, what the emotional toll would be in reading from it and sharing from it. And what surprised me is that somehow having these experiences on the page, in a book, in this container that has its own life now outside of me, just has been really a liberatory experience. I mean, it just, it's opened up spaces within me, and the feedback from readers and everything has just been really validating that the book is out there in the world and it is having its own life, that there's something nice about not having control over it anymore, not, you know, finessing the sentences, finessing the shapes of the pieces, and just now it gets to live out there.
Oh, wow. Well, speaking of the shapes of the pieces, the first section is a series of pieces addressed to murderer, and they seem to be written with little hope. Were those written early in your illness or collected from points throughout your recovery, or did you draw on something else for that?
Yeah, so the murderer character, which, as you've mentioned, personifies suicidal ideation throughout the piece, that character wasn't present when I first started working on this. And, you know, as far as illness recovery, for me, being bipolar is a way of being. It's part of how I show up in the world and is often shifting and changing. So, you know, so that's something that's what I hoped with Psych Murders, that it's not kind of this overcoming narrative of at the end, I'm all better or something. For me, it's part of my sensitivity in the world. And it's just part of ebbs and flows in just bipolar waves that are part of my being. But the murderer, I was actually writing, and he first showed up just in a free write. And this was probably a year into working on the poems in the piece. And I was like, huh. You know, I was like, this is interesting. And so then I started leaning into that character more and really leaning into personifying and amplifying him. You know, in the piece, there are pieces, he's sitting in a lazy boy. It's kind of this enmeshed relationship. And it gave me a really, way into explaining and letting people who might not have any experience with suicidal ideation, trying to give them a window into what that experience might feel like, acknowledging that for everyone, you know, that can be different. So that piece, The Murderer, it's interesting. Sarah, you asking about when in the process did that come in? Because the placement of that particular piece changed in the final revisions. So initially the book started with Waiting Bay, which is a series looking at my experience of electroconvulsive therapy or shock treatment. And then later on in the revisions, I wanted to have that murderer character first, just the agency of Dear Murder, you know, of just beginning with that relationship that felt really important as a through line throughout.
Well, you've touched a little bit on the next thing we want to talk about, the Waiting Bay and that experience of the electroshock therapy. I mean, you are very vulnerable in this. You show us the physical effects, the fear it produces, the ambivalence, or maybe even occasionally anger toward the procedure and the doctors and, you know, kind of your uncertainty about it all. What were you trying to share with the reader about that course of treatment? And how do you feel about it now that you're not taking that treatment anymore? So,
So one main thing I wanted to show the reader is that shock treatment happens, that it happens in the US every day at a hospital near you. I realize, you know, Canada, different countries have different relationships with this treatment, but certainly in the US, it's a very common treatment. It's the one that makes hospitals and psychiatric units the most money as well. And so I also just wanted to share the inside of the experience, also the power dynamics of, you know, I mentioned about Dear Murder having this agency of writing this letter, whereas, you know, in that treatment, I was put under anesthesia and a seizure is induced. And there's, you know, a recovery period, and it happens at first about three times a week. So I just wanted to, give a window into what that might be like, and just the extremes of and depth for me of depression and suicidal ideation that even, you know, lent itself to this treatment course, a series of shock treatments being suggested for me. They'd also been suggested when I was 27. And at that point, I completely was like, no. There is one moment in the book where I talk about that I wanted to die so much that I just said, sure, do it. Because I just no longer really cared about what what happened to me. So, do you know, I feel like if someone would have dug a little deeper of what my reasons were for saying yes. Yeah. And as far as how I feel about it now, yeah, for me, the impact of the shock treatment I live with daily, I mean, it's traumatic brain injury. And I had time, they talk about short-term memory loss, but then often long-term memory loss is not really highlighted, whereas I did have long-term memory loss that I still have, where, you know, I saw pictures of myself hiking and whatnot, and I don't remember being there. I also had the experience where this is, you know, geographically my spatial orientation, where I didn't know how to get to the post office. I no longer knew who the names of my neighbors. So the impact has been, you know, I've had to figure out how to adjust and how to work with some of those impacts from it. But as far as, I mean, I also acknowledge that for some people, shock treatments may be helpful. Do you know, I have met people for that experience. But for me, the real problem is the lack of transparency by the medical industrial complex about what that might look like, what the impacts might be, and also the fact that they really don't know how it works or what it's going to do, you know, to those impacts, which is true for a lot of with psychiatry with medications as well. We know this might help you. We don't know exactly why or how, you know, how it works. So, you know, I always acknowledge that each individual, it's their choice, but I also in psych murders am looking at how being, you know, being in this very vulnerable state, how choice can get very blurry about what are my options here. And being inside of, you know, a lot of multiple psych hospitalizations, the choices get limited to what's in those walls. And it can be hard to open up. I mean, now, like reading my bio at the beginning, the introduction that you did, Kim, it's like, now I'm in a disability culture performance group. Do you know, I've really, my life has opened up to disability culture and community and just people celebrating and acknowledging all of the challenges as well with living living as a disabled person, and also the connections and the beauty that lies within those that community as well. So I want to acknowledge that that's really been an important part for me of psych murders coming into the world.
Yeah, and in some pieces you write from striking points of view, such as The Shock Machine and Your Nemesis, Murderer, and they create a very different type of tone. So what inspired those pieces? What kind of response do you think that you might be seeking from the reader, or are you seeking a response?
Yes. So with those, I love writing personification poems. It's so, as a writer, it's so much fun to like try to step into another persona, or in like the piece that you're mentioning, to step into the persona of a machine, do you know, and what that might be feel, you know, what that machine might be feeling or its motives. So just that form of the personification is really fun for me. And I think it gives the reader just a whole different perspective, rather than, do you know, the book, whereas I call this a hybrid memoir, this is me in the book, but that, you know, other viewpoints come in. And also is important for me as well with this to have some play within it, do you know, to have some fun. I mean, it is very serious subject matter, obviously, but like with the character of the murderer, it felt like there was some room for some play within that too, just within that relationship.
in those pieces, there is a surprising amount of playfulness that contrasts with the more serious work. It is kind of an interesting dichotomy, I guess, is a good word for that. But yeah. So there's also a recurring group of pieces subtitled Mad Flora and Fauna Catalog. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about your relationship to the animals and plants in those series, and what did they mean to you as you were kind of working your way through your illness?
Yes. So the Mad Flora and Fauna Catalog actually originated as part of a collaboration in a way. There's another writer, Ellen Redbird, who was writing a piece, a disability piece, and she sent around a questionnaire. And somehow in answering those questions, the pieces that are in that series, Turtle, Hyena, and Kudzu, where I'm, you know, using turtle for the depression animal and hyena as mania and kudzu as chronic. Those kind of came into being from that questionnaire. But for me, also another really important part of my practice is an eco-poetic practice where I really love to be out in nature and exploring landscapes. I'm a dancer, so often parts of my practice are moving, you know, often in different environments. And so Turtle, Hyena, the Mad Flora and Fauna is also a product of that. A lot of Psych Murders was written inside of a movement practice that I lead called Contemplative Dance and Writing Practice, where there's meditation and there's improvisation as well as writing. So for me, it's very generative and nurturing to have movement as part of the writing and also being in different landscapes. And movement was especially important just because of the, for me, charged content of Psych Murders, just to have that, to have that as a touch point.
That's a wonderful, unconventional way of coming into writing. I love that thought. And at times you also appear to question conventional thinking in pieces such as The Classifieds, Bipolar Girls on a Manic High, Are My Addiction, and The Murderer, Murder Defense. Can you tell us a little bit more about what inspired those pieces and how they work in the book and your work?
Definitely. Yes. So with the Classifieds piece, that originated actually, I was at a conference and I'm just seeing my note on it, so I get the name correctly. But I was at a conference on, it was on sexuality and disability in Ohio, and I was listening to a paper being given about bipolar and as well as like the hypersexualization and there being specific classified ads like looking for people in this case, particularly women that were in a manic state. So listening to that lecture was actually the inspiration for writing that Classifieds piece, which again, similar to the personification poems, just felt like it had a lot of energy. It had a specific container. I like working with pieces that have a certain shape. In some ways, as throughout the book, the shock treatment series that has specific shapes and locations on the page, that in this book really was helpful in the form. And as well as for the murderer nemesis, when he showed up, I played with all different ways of addressing him through letters. There's a sonnet to the murderer as well. And And then also some pieces where he's speaking. It's his piece, almost like a letter to me. So that was just fun to play with, just again, those different viewpoints to give the reader different entrances. That was another important part with this book of how can the reader enter, and how can they exit if they need to? How does that work both on the page and through the content and through the form?
And one of the running themes, of course, is frustration. It's a very frustrating experience to go through this period in your illness. And, obviously there were times the doctors didn't know what to do. They'd throw a pill at it, and others who felt depersonalized. But a really touching moment is when a nurse reaches out and holds your hand out of kindness. Looking back on that whole experience now, what recommendations would you make to help improve care for patients like you that are going through something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. In that moment, I still remember. It was so striking in the absence of any kind of touch that wasn't utilitarian. The blood pressure read, the thermometer, that was just a really just moment of connection of her holding my hand. And that is, I believe, for mental health care, that's exactly what is needed, is connection, is community. Not this focus on, oh, here's an individual who's sick, how do we fix them? And also the discomfort around, here's this mad person, like we need to put them outside of community. So for me, my hope partly in writing this book is to share what the status quo, what care is like right now for many people. And I think we really need a whole new paradigm of care that embraces not just focusing on the individual, but community, and also all the different factors that can cause people to need care, as far as discrimination that happens, people that don't have housing, people who don't have basic needs met, who don't have food, workplace, just having those societal, problems be acknowledged, that those are also factors that contribute. And right now, really, the focus is kind of a very narrow view into you're depressed or you're suicidal, we need to fix you. When really it's like, no, we all need to work together, not to necessarily fix. There's also this thing of some of these reactions are really normal, make sense reactions to circumstances that are so difficult. And I think COVID and the pandemic has kind of ripped away whatever veils were on the mental health system to show how much more is needed. Connection is such, and for some people that might not be with other people. It might be with the walk that you go on or an animal or something different. But I really think instead of trying to fix the medical industrial complex that we have, like that there really needs to be something new. And I don't know what that is. I think it's not for an individual person to come up with. It needs to be a collective. How do we have collective care in our communities to really embrace people that, might need extra support?
That is so true. So true. What are you working on now? Are you writing anything new or going in a different direction?
Yes. Partly I worked on another manuscript the whole time I was working on Psych Murders, which in a way for me, that was a release valve. So with Psych Murders, it's, as we've talked about, really what a focus on interiority of experience. So I also have a manuscript called Every Horizon Turns Liquid. And in that, that's a space where, you know, while I'm walking and moving along the shorelines of Lake Michigan, looking at the changing water levels, that's a more eco-poetic exploration. So I'm continuing to work on that. And I also have a newer project that, just as an umbrella title, I'm calling it a series around my ghost sister. So that's looking at and working with hauntings and a sister that's older than me that was stillborn, who was named Stephanie as well. So working with those hauntings, as well as depression and bipolar, but in a different mode, just looking at this sister relationship, both the absence and presence. So both of those are kind of continuing along. I often like to work on more than one thing at once, because again, just that shifting back and forth can give me information for each project.
Well, we'll look forward to those. They sound very interesting. So would you like to read some of your work for our audience from Psych Murders?
Definitely. So I'm going to start by reading from the opening piece in the book, and then I'll read one other poem that we actually talked about, the turtle piece. So, admission threshold. Strike a match, light a candle, notice the shadows. We are at the threshold about to enter. This is an act of faith, a step into the unknown, breath practice. Thank you for being in the doorway with me, the safest and strongest part of a structure. No, you can return here if you need to. I'm inviting you into spaces that usually need special keys and diagnosis codes to access. Psychiatric locked inpatient units, ECT, electroconvulsive therapy or shock treatments, bipolar extreme mind states. You will meet my friend and nemesis, murderer, the gutsy antics of suicidal ideation. I want you to be safe and cared for in this text that has sharp parts and electricity and murderers. There are places I made on the page for you to rest, to enter and exit at will. Not a given in these spaces. Please take whatever time you need to be with these words. This book is not a 72-hour hold. The general time frame of an involuntary psych inpatient admission. This is a shadow text. Let it sing in grunts and incomplete hymns. Something scalded, something lit up and changeable, matchbook at ready. And then I'm going to read a piece from the Mad Flora and Fauna catalog. This is Turtle. Turtle is the depression animal. Or rather, this was the animal I aligned with when I was finding my way forward, or who knows in what direction. Some compass dislocated from a ship long splattered in the ocean. A wreck of suicidal ideation and concrete planning. I never thought I'd find my way away from alive. This is Turtle. The slow movement. Middle ground. Ability to pull into a home. A shell, or my own skin. A limbic striated reach toward the beach that gave me shore and light. Steady, no acrobatic feats. Simply alive, pull and extend, a bit of push, but not too much, because I'm tired.
Stephanie Height, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your powerful book, Psych Murders.
Well, Kim and Sarah, it's really been a pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you. Thank you so much, and for your beautiful questions.
Thanks for joining us. Look for more episodes of All Right in Sin City wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out our website, allrightinsincity.com. For information and announcements of new podcasts, sign up to our email list or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.